Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. On today's program, Politics Ohio with Emily McCord, Bill Felker pulls another page from Poor Will's Almanac. And this week on WISO, Nikki Dakota spoke with Rick Fannin of Fannigan's Isle about the life of fellow musician Tom Scheidt, who passed away this week. You'll hear some of that conversation later in the program. Up first, tonight, WISO will present A Clear Day in September, a program from the WISO News Department commemorating the 10th anniversary of 9/11. In preparing for the program, WISO received calls from listeners who told us their stories, and we met others who were planning memorial events around the city. American Veterans Post 2003 in Dayton is planning a memorial service for this evening. I went there to get details of the event. I spoke with several people about their memories of that day 10 years ago. Don Oberlin is a Miami Township Korean War vet. He was drafted into the Army when he was 21 on September 11th in 2001. Don was at his Tuesday morning bowling league.
Well, I thought it was just a small airplane. So after bowling, I went and took a timesheet up this, and they showed the picture of that plane running into that tower.
In shock.
Thelma Schneider of West Carrollton describing what she felt that morning. She is a veteran of the Second World War, but like many on that Tuesday morning, shock wasn't her first reaction.
I was at home that day, and it came on over the radio what had happened. And it didn't really faze me at first, because I thought all the planes that fly over New York, you know, there was bound to be one sometime. And then when it came on that they had done the Pentagon, this got me, because that's where I was stationed. That's where I worked during the war, was the Pentagon. And I thought of all the times when they could have come over from the other countries and bombed us, and they had to do it now at peacetime.
Frederick Springsteen spent 3 years in the U.S. Army and continued to serve his country for 30 years as a firefighter. He was a deputy chief for the Kettering Fire Department, and so his thoughts on this day are also for the first responders.
What great people they were. Yes. And that's a sad thing, we lost so many of them. Firefighters all over the world do the same thing. I mean, that's our job. The 325 gave everything. But I'm proud of them. And I'm proud to be a firefighter.
Paying tribute to those first responders is part of AMVET Post 2003's focus at this year's memorial service. Ed Rosengarten is the post commander.
Something should be done every year about it, just like we do with Pearl Harbor Day. And we have Memorial Day every year. But I think more should be done on that day for the first responders. It's still the first responders that did it that day.
So you have some memorial events coming up. Let's talk about that.
We're doing a tribute on 911 on a Sunday night at 8 o'clock here at the Post, honoring all the servicemen, basically, and the first responders, policemen, firemen, EMTs, and stuff like that. It's about a half-hour program. We're going to have some dignitaries here, some guest speakers, do some patriotic music, lighting candles and stuff like that for each of the services, plus the first responders. Hope to have a good crowd here. Everybody's welcome to come and enjoy the program.
You can find a number of 9/11 memorial events on our website at wiso.org. And as part of WISO's program, A Clear Day in September, our own Juliet Fromholt spoke with P.R. Frank, a teacher at the Ponens Career Technology Center in Dayton. In this excerpt from their interview, Frank talks about how his students are learning about the events of 9/11.
After September 11th, I think I work harder in my classroom to talk to students about relationships that I have with people from around the world, with people from much different backgrounds than we grow up with, and how just giving somebody a chance, talking to people from other backgrounds, can give them an understanding of how we might better be able to get along. Even if we have differences, there are also similarities. And I want my students to look for those similarities so they can make connections with other people that they don't know or don't understand and be able to broker some peace. Every spring I take my students from Ponens Career Technology Center to New York City. We go primarily for the Tribeca Film Festival, but because there are so many other great opportunities in New York City for production, I teach photography and I teach web design, we go to these places and we visit them, we go to shows, we go to a nice dinner, we see the whole city. But one thing that I try to make sure we do every trip is to visit Ground Zero. Some students that we take don't know too much about the attack. They go there and they say, oh, it's called Ground Zero. Why do they call it Ground Zero? What were the World Trade Centers? What are these buildings? I think maybe they were too young to understand all of that when the news was heavy with it. This last year when we went to New York in the spring, we went to Ground Zero, and it was maybe 9 or 10 o'clock at night. It was very difficult to see anything because they have a lot of walls up now while they're building the new memorial, and the walkway to be able to see it is closed. But on our way back, we stopped by the fire station right there at Ground Zero. The doors were open, and there was a fireman leaning against the wall and just enjoying the nice evening. And so I encouraged my students to ask him questions. I said, look, he's standing there. I'm sure he'll be happy to let you see the fire truck or whatever, which is a very, primary thing to do, see the fire truck. But I knew it might encourage conversation about Ground Zero. So they talked to this man, and they talked to several other firefighters there for a good 45 minutes to an hour about their experiences about 9/11, why they are firefighters. And it brought several of my students to tears to listen to these firefighters talk about brothers in the firefighting brigade that lost their lives on September 11th. We walk around the corner from the fire station, and there is a mural on the wall that's a carving made out of maybe bronze. Looking at this memorial, this bronze sculpture, really took some of our students back and put them into a meditative mode that must have lasted another 20 minutes. And I just stood back and let that happen. I got a chance to do that shortly after September 11th when I visited New York, but I was glad to see these students really start to understand what happened on that day. And the tears told the story. They were really moved by it and had a lot of questions after we left there and really wanted to talk about it. So I am pleased that I can give them that opportunity. It's one of the reasons that I love to take them to New York. It's one thing to see a film festival, but it's another thing to have them witness firsthand and talk to firsthand some of the people that experienced September 11th. The more that students are educated about September 11th and why it happened and why terrorism is still going on, I think the more they can act in a way that will not only prevent more terrorist attacks from happening proactively, but also try to understand where people are coming from so that when they grow up and they become the politicians and the people that make things happen militarily or financially in the world, they can do it in a way, in a manner that may prevent this idea from ever crossing anyone's mind.
P.R. Frank is a teacher at the Ponens Career Technology Center in Dayton. He is just one of the voices you'll hear tonight in our program, A Clear Day in September, at 6 and 11 on 91.3 WYSO.
Wrap me up in the oilskins and jumper. No more on the docks I'll be seen. Just tell me, old shipmates, I'm taking the trip, mates. I'll see you someday on Fiddler's Green.
The voice of a beloved musician who passed just this week after an accident, but left behind so many fans and such a loving musical legacy. And on that note, it's a pleasure to welcome longtime partner of Tom Scheidt, whose voice we just heard. He's Rick Fannin, formed Fannigan's Isle with Tom way back in 1984. And it's a pleasure to speak to you today, Rick. Hello.
Hi, Nikki. Thank you.
Thanks so much for taking a moment to talk here. I made mention of it yesterday on the air, some beautiful, beautiful remembrances pouring in. And as we were listening to that song, Rick, you mentioned how much how proud you were of that recording and how it was lovely to hear it on this day.
Sure was nice to hear that. Thanks for playing that. Yeah, we were always proud of that particular cut that was on our first album titled The Orange and the Green, a double album that we released in 1987. And I always loved that. It's one of my favorite recordings on the CD. It's one of the songs that I associate most closely with Tom.
He was a multi-instrumentalist and also very involved, not just in making music, but by all accounts that I have received over the last 24 hours, he was about fostering musical tendencies and encouraging musicians as well.
Yeah, very much so. And he gave music lessons and various instruments, from guitar, banjo, Irish tin whistle, Scottish bagpipes, boron. Tom was a great supporter of music and music education.
He did a lot with the schools, and he developed a character called Thomas McGregor, the Scottish pirate.
Yeah, right.
Tell us a little about that.
I can't remember what year he started doing that, but I'm thinking he's been doing that for about close to 20 years. And a one-man show that he developed, teaching the history of pirating, and he played sort of a humorous character, as you know, very humorous person that he was, and he's performed that at just countless schools and libraries throughout the years, and he developed some other shows as well.
He played the bagpipes. Apparently, was among the best in the region.
Yeah, that was actually the first before he ever even sang an Irish song. I guess he took an interest in learning the Scottish pipes. You know, he was really the first person in the Dayton area to play Irish music, play out of the pubs and other events, playing Irish tunes with his first duo called the Davidsons. Of course, he played rock and roll for many years before that. But then he had a really popular group called Miami Jade, and they were not only Irish songs, but in the late 70s and early 80s, they were doing electric English folk rock, such as Fairport Convention, Steel Eyes Span, and groups like that. I mean, it was, and they were hugely popular.
He's done a lot for Irish music and just music in general. Let's hear a little bit from The Rambles of Spring. You were kind enough to suggest some tracks from your recordings with Fannigan's Isle. And tell us a little bit before we hear this bagpipe medley about the recording and how this came to be.
We recorded, that was from our second album, titled The Rambles of Spring, and recorded that at Rephrase Studio. I believe that the medley, I think it's about a four-tune medley with the Scottish, Tom Scottish pipes, and I accompanied him on the Irish drum and the boron. That's about all I can remember about it.
Let's hear a little of that. We pay tribute to the memory of Tom Scheidt, a great beloved musician in the Miami Valley. Here's from Fannigan's Isle, the bagpipe medley.
Thank you.
It's Fannigan's Isle from their Rambles of Spring album, and featuring the bagpipe skills of the late Tom Scheidt on 91.3 WYSO. We're speaking to a longtime partner, musical partner, and also a member of Fannigan's Isle, Rick Fannin. Rick, tell me a little bit about how you met Tom.
I first met him in, I think, 1969. I was in my very first rock band at the time I was in high school. And in Howard Music one day, I saw a little sign up that a keyboardist and a lead singer were looking for members to form a band. And a couple of my bandmates and I went over to visited him at his home in Yellow Springs. And we just, we were friends from then on. We didn't actually form a group at that time, but he was a very entertaining guy from the moment I met him. And gave us a tour, kind of gave our me and my young starstruck bandmates a little tour of his musical abilities and his toy and his tin soldiers and his collections of, you know, he collected little miniature soldiers when he was young.
Yeah, he had a real affinity for history. I got, by the way, just a lovely email from local musician drummer Gary Markham, who made a list of, for example, said that not only did he play the bagpipes, but he taught them, and that he did many funerals and weddings in the region. Gary writes, everyone knows this guy. He was much more than just Fannigan's Isle, as he played in the Stumps, Dr. Buckwheat's Animal Farm, Miami Jade, Norman D, and the Beachheads, Tommy, and the Moondogs, and Chaz. It says Tom was the guy in town that made his living from playing music all his life. He also did voiceovers for the History Channel.
Right.
I didn't know that.
I don't know if he'd done any really recently, but I think it was an occasional thing. They would contact him. I don't remember exactly when he started doing that, but yeah, he was very happy. He was very proud of that. History was a life passion for him, Tom.
And he helped to bring it alive through music. By all accounts, just a beloved character. We, with great sadness, mark the passing of just a beloved Miami Valley musician, a Rick Fannin, part of Fannigan's Isle, and a longtime musical collaborator with Tom Scheidt, who passed yesterday after an accident. So beautifully remembered. We'll put this audio, by the way, up on the website in the days to come. And you can look there also for any memorial arrangements that are made. And we'll keep you posted. Rick, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you. Could I just say I'd like to thank my dear friend and partner of 27 years for his friendship. And he enriched my life in many ways. And I'll miss him terribly. Thank you for having me on.
Rick, thank you so much.
Thank you. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the first week of early fall. When autumn leaf turn starts near equinox in the Midwest, the deciduous trees are bare in northern Canada. In Oregon and Maine, foliage colors are approaching their greatest brilliance. In the Rocky Mountains, bull elks are mustering their harems and snow is falling. Along the 40th parallel, the smoky tint of last week's canopy quickly becomes clear and bright. Now the soybean fields are yellow all across the country. Touch-me-nots are popping in the wetlands. Wood nettle seeds are black. Wingstem, clearweed, and ironweed complete their cycles. Buckeyes are starting to burst from their hulls. More black walnuts, more hickory nuts, and more acorns come down. The huge pink mallows of the swamps have died, heads dark, leaves disintegrating. Scattered in the pastures, the milkweed pods are full, straining, ready to open. Mullein stalks stand bare like withered cacti. In the perennial garden, varieties of late hostas, like the August moon and the royal standard, discard their petals. Robin migration calls complement the chatter of crows and jays and squirrels in the early mornings. Grackles are flocking in the fields. Cicada holidays become more frequent in the cooler afternoons. Sometimes katydids keep silent after dark, leaving the whole night to the great chorus of crickets. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the second week of early fall. In the meantime, watch the roadsides for milkweed pods bursting in the cool of the new season. Poor Will's Almanac for 2012. 14 months and 300 pages of seasonal essays, notes on farming and gardening, weather, phenology, astronomical information, puzzles with cash prizes, and reader stories is now available. More information can be found at poorwillsalmanac.com.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at wyso.org.
Welcome to Politics Ohio. I'm Emily McCord, and I'm joined by Bill Cohen today with the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Thanks for being here.
Sure.
So there was some news earlier this week on the Ohio Senate staffers getting raises, and this comes at a time when there are a lot of austerity measures happening. Bill, can you tell me the background on this?
Well, it turns out that several key staff members for both the Republicans and the Democrats in the Ohio Senate have been given pay raises of several thousand dollars, actually retroactive to January 1st. And this comes at the same time, as you mentioned, that, you know, state government has been cutting back, state programs have been cut, unionized workers are thinking that their pay and benefits may be trimmed or held down. So it raised a lot of eyebrows. But, you know, we went to the Senate leaders and said, why did you do this? And the answer was basically, well, these people have worked extra hard the last several months on that new state budget and on the collective bargaining bill and a lot of other controversial stuff. They've worked very hard. And some of them have gotten job offers to go elsewhere. And we wanted to keep these high-quality staffers on the job. And so we felt we had to offer them pay raises, and that's what they did.
I'm wondering if this could have any impact when voters are going to the polls this November on things like whether to vote yes or no on the Senate Bill 5 issue.
Well, the folks who are leading the vote no drive, the people who don't like the new collective bargaining bill, are trying to use this as a sales pitch for people to vote no. They say, how dare these legislators give raises to key staffers when, first of all, state government is cutting back, state programs are being cut, and also this new collective bargaining law cuts union bargaining power on behalf of prison guards and teachers and social workers and police and firefighters and garbage collectors and on and on and on. So I think you may see this sales pitch by the Vote No side as they roll out more of their ads and their sales pitches.
Well, speaking of ads, they have already begun ads that are advocating one way or another regarding the collective bargaining law. What's making the rounds right now?
Well, actually, it was last week when the Vote No drive on State Issue 2, they fired the first shot in this TV ad war. They started airing an ad statewide starring firefighters, and they had a Columbus firefighter in this ad saying, look, when we go to a fire that's blazing, we depend not only on our equipment but our fellow firefighters, and we need a full complement of firefighters to go in there and rescue people and fight the fires. But this new collective bargaining law forbids our union to negotiate staffing levels. And they say this could be a matter of life and death. So that was their pitch. Then this week came basically the response from the Vote Yes folks. And they have an ad with a firefighter, actually a former firefighter. He's now the mayor of Toledo, Mike Bell. And he gets on there and he says, well, at one point many, many years ago, I was laid off because my city didn't have enough money. And this new collective bargaining law will, and he didn't quite use these words, but the basic thrust is this new collective bargaining law lets us hold down fringe benefits and pay for firefighters. And if we can do that, we'll have more money to keep more of the firefighters on the job. So you've basically got a war of words, and firefighters are the soldiers on both sides.
And it seems safe to assume that we're going to be seeing a lot more of this in the next couple months.
Oh, my goodness, yes. We're expecting both sides to spend at least $10 million, perhaps $20 million, could even be more. We're expecting money from inside Ohio to flow into these campaigns, money from outside Ohio to flow in. And I think we're going to see a lot of TV ads by the time we get to Election Day. I think a lot of voters will say, enough already.
In some news of local interest this week, Republican Ohio representative from Beaver Creek, Jared Martin, lost a leadership position in the House. So what's the story there?
Well, he was cited for drunk driving, and there were some other, I think, some past brushes he'd had, something similar. And so he was under pressure from House Speaker Bill Batchelder to basically resign his seat. But Jared Martin said, no, I'm not going to do that. So the Speaker he used the power he could, and he said, okay, you're going to stay on the job? Okay, fine. I am taking you off your chairmanship position of the House Veterans Committee. So not only are you going to lose some power and some clout, you're also going to lose the $6,500 you get paid extra every year to chair that committee.
I've been speaking with Bill Cohen from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That's it for this week's edition of WISO Weekend on member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at wyso.org. Coming up next on WYSO, The Book Nook.